Ready for an amazing deal? Breezeline's fiber-powered internet starting at $19.99 per month offers the reliability you deserve and security you can trust. Whether you're streaming, gaming, or working from home, we've got all your needs covered with speeds up to 1 gig and our 2-year price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with 2 free months of internet, free equipment, and free Wi-Fi your way to protect against cyber threats. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires July 8th, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hey everybody, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
I'm Allison, and... oh, God, the other way. Whatever. Riz is sitting next to me, and he's touching everything.
And this is a podcast where we read a horror movie just for you.
And just if you're for you.
A new listener, Riz is, someone call him a cat. I think of him as a little tiny man in a tuxedo that just runs all over Allison's desk all day.
Yes, he is a small furry man who is dressed to the nines, who just sat on my... there he goes.
Right. It's like having a dinner guest that wants to put his butthole on your computer.
Yes.
We've all been there.
Yeah. I mean, it's like every time I throw a party, another guy's like, let me put my butthole on your work stuff.
And that's why your parties are legendary, Allison.
I know. Hallie, how you doing?
I'm good. It's raining again in beautiful Los Angeles, California. It's really insane. I mean, like, I've only lived here 3 years, but boy, it's coming down. And I realize I don't have a pet. I've talked ad nauseum about getting rats. I still am in conversation with myself about that. But I have instead channeled all of my energy into my plants, right?
So, yes. Yeah. That was me for a long time.
Yeah. And in LA, if you've been here, if you live here, you know that if you break off a piece of a succulent, you could just pot it and grow a plant.
Yes.
This has proved to be... perhaps not, like, it is like God's design has created a situation where I've gone insane. Like, what that means, I could grow, I mean, 7 right now. But like, but the thing is, a lot of them are succulents. So every time, I have one of these guys right here.
Burrow's tail.
And one of the little, I don't even call these. These little, I just want to eat them. The little knoblets.
Yeah.
One of the little knobs fell off. I'm like, I can grow a whole goddamn new plant from that. I've done it before.
I know.
But then it's like, I got to get more pots. I got to get more dirt. And then it's like,
it's not cheap either.
Wait, what?
It's not cheap either. Like, you're like, the plant is free. And it's like, oh, but the pots and the dirt are not free.
For my little babies, it's expensive, Allison.
I do that with my pothos plants because they're like the long vine. Like,
I got 3 from work that they gave me because they were dying. They're like, do you want these dying plants? And tried to nurse them back to health. And I said, sure. But that just means I have 3 gigantic dying pothos plants right now.
Yeah. So I keep like trimming mine because it's growing like the perimeter of my apartment. And but then it's like, then I just like, you know, put it in water until it starts like sprouting and then like plant it again. And I'm like, well, now I just have like more.
Yes.
Not solving any problems.
It's I guess it's creating the problem of joy, Allison. And what's new with you? What are you joyful about? Or horrified about, I guess.
I mean, my internet was out yesterday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., my building. And I was just well, that's the day.
Well, alone with myself at last.
By the time my internet was back, it was like 3:30, and I was like, I can't start working now. That's psycho.
We started recording this late because my internet was out, and there is a moment of real freedom before you realize, I guess I could go anywhere else and try to record or use internet.
Well, I had to do some shopping, and I was like, well, I guess I'll just like do that until, and I bought a fabulous suit at Rachel Comey because I'm going to the Planned Parenthood Gala on this coming Monday.
Oh, awesome.
So.
That sounds fun.
Needed to spend a bunch of money.
This is revealing when we're recording this on March 10th, but I'm going to Naomi Ekperigin's wedding. Naomi, to her wonderful husband-to-be, Andy Beckerman, who, if you listen to the pod, you'll know she just was our guest for the Megan episode.
Yes, iconic. It's March 10th to us, but it's still not... yes. The end of the month, whenever you're listening to this, I have no idea when in the month it is or when you listen to the podcast. It might not be the day it comes out, but please mark your calendars. brand new live show coming to you from the internet, Sunday, March 26th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And obviously, we've got to do
The new Scream. I couldn't be more thrilled because all the reviews that I've seen, even the ones that are mixed, are very positive.
Yeah.
Which I was flummoxed by since, one, we know allegedly Neve Campbell has not returned. My secret suspicion is that she has returned, but they had to bury it.
Everything I see is like, I can't spoil anything, but and I'm like, she's there.
But I can't believe it hasn't come out. I know.
And people are being good.
Well, you know, and that's the thing is we will be breaking that boundary, but it will be later in the month. And also that's what I was thinking about this podcast.
You're opting in.
You want to have it spoiled. We certainly would never just post spoilers to Twitter or something. But to be fair, I feel like given how it looks, how out of the box, you know, it's Scream in Manhattan, Ghostface Takes Manhattan.
I know.
The fact it's gotten good reviews is thrilling. I genuinely can't wait.
Because I could see it being like, ugh, they tried to do something new. It didn't work. It doesn't land. We're missing the, like, I just feel like, you know, you take the Scream out of Woodsboro, but can you take the Woodsboro out of Scream?
Well, I mean, we know from the third film when they take Ghostface takes LA that it is a
Ghostface goes to Hollywood?
Yeah, it is a romp and a half. Would I say it's scary? I would not. But if that's not what they're going for, the reviews I've said, like, they genuinely have moments of scares.
Yes.
Which is what is shocking to me. But the last two, I feel like they've kept it pretty close to the vest, like 4 and 5. Like, they played it pretty realistically in a way that's fun. So we truly can't wait. I'm going to go see it this weekend, I think.
Oh, that's very exciting. So get your tickets to the live show at moment.co/ruined, Sunday, March 26th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, Scream 6. So,
all right.
I guess without further ado.
Let's do this.
Let's do this.
We are continuing our month, which is a month of oft-requested films. And this film is one that I saw in theaters, I believe, and absolutely loved. And that is, of course, 2015's Green Room, written and directed by Jeremy Solner. And it stars Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, Aaliyah Shawkat. And there's a fun, like, celebrity cameo as the villain. Not a cameo, he's a huge part of the film, but a huge celebrity reveal that in the theater was absolutely incredible.
Are you going to hold that until we get there?
Yes, yeah. Because when you, in the movie, he steps out of a car and you get the moment of like, like that's who's the villain in the film? Ooh, fabulous. It's so good.
Oh, that's so fun.
And huge fan of this film, beautifully shot. Jeremy Solner also did Blue Ruin and Murder Party, which I have not seen, so we'll have to do that for the podcast. That was his first feature. Allison, we always like to have Allison watch the trailer and give us our first reactions. What is your reaction to the trailer for Green Room?
I mean, terrifying.
Yeah.
This looks so scary. Also, like, is this like a neo-Nazi thing?
Yeah, I got bad news. It's neo-Nazis.
Yeah, I just like, I caught, like, even in the first, like, 2 seconds, I was like, oh, no. Like, so, like, that's scary for everyone, obviously. But, of course, being Jewish, it's always,
absolutely.
Like, an extra level of, like, oh, boy, not again. And I will say, having been in a lot of terrifying green rooms in my life as a performer, this, chilling.
And
really chilling.
And that is so, we always like to take a baseline scary. That was my question is, how scary do you find the concept of being in a green room with a neo-Nazi?
I mean, I think I've done it. Like, I'm almost positive it's happened.
Right, except, like, now they have hugely successful podcasts and make, like, $80,000 a month.
Now it's like they would never be in a green room with me because they're so famous.
But they are in the green room at Joe Rogan's new comedy mothership in beautiful Texas.
Anti-cancel culture.
Oh, God.
Gross. But it is, like, green rooms are this, like, scary space. And I think especially as, like, a woman moving through, like, performing, like, you just are in – they're never set up for women. They're always, like – there's one in particular that's, like, vaguely local to New York that's, like – it's, like, two old busted-up recliners and a bunch of exposed wires. And, like, they're just not nice to the performers, but, like, particularly the women. And you're just in this, like, tiny – it's a very trapped feeling.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't you are not, like, Celine Dion backstage with, like, a throat steamer and, full butler service and a dressing room with like fabulous lighting. Like for the most part, for most performers, for most of their careers, it's like a tiny little prison of like varying degrees of comfort. So very scary.
And also, if you hook up with any one of those guys you meet there, it will feel like your throat's been steamed.
You will 100%.
Have to go to the ER.
Yeah, you need to go to a hospital.
I will say, so as someone who also did stand-up for a really long time, and God, when I first came out, I was like, maybe I should do stand-up. And it's like, I think I don't, that part of my brain has withered. I have been thinking of myself as like a succulent, like the gay part of my brain survived, so I have to regrow myself. And that part will not allow me to do stand-up anymore. And I respect that.
Well, that's very healthy.
But there is something analogous that is sort of like comes up a lot in the movie, obviously, is sort of like, these are neo-Nazi punks. Right. And it is sort of not that I'm saying that all comedians are neo-Nazis, but there is something in comedy where they're like, I don't listen. I don't obey anyone. Like I'm on the edge.
It's and about then, like rule breaking and boundary pushing.
But then in reality, at least when we were doing it, like, yeah, what that really means is you have to like suck. Metaphorically, you have to like kiss ass. Of like you have to think Louis C.K. is the best person in the world, so you have to like whiff one fart of his. Like it's not different. It's just a different set of older white men you have to like kowtow to. And in this movie, it's the same thing where it's like, you cannot be a neo-Nazi and be punk because you literally are just kowtowing. Like you're not outside of it. You created the same system because you can't actually be punk. You can't actually
be free. There's nothing that breaks through, like you're not like out. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and that's something that comes out of here of like, there is this constant need to be like, I'm breaking the rules. I don't listen to anyone. And then you go to those spaces. It's like, no, you just listen to like a different white guy than like the white guy that everyone else is listening to. It's the same goddamn system. You just keep recreating it.
You're participating in a very clear hierarchy. It's just different from the one most people are participating in.
Exactly. So before we begin, would you like to guess the twist in Green Room, Allison?
Guess the twist.
I mean, clearly our villain is a little bit of a twist. I'm going to guess that one of the kids in the band that's being held hostage is a neo-Nazi.
Okay, great. Excellent. Because is this not like a traditional horror movie where there's going to be a big reveal? So it is going to be about the people. Like it's an extremely grounded, realistic horror movie. I actually don't know if I would even call this horror. Like it's billed as horror. Oh. To me, this is more of like an action drama or like a thriller. There definitely are moments of horror, but it is a thriller, I would say.
Okay, interesting.
So I wonder, not that I think you would want to watch it because there's a lot of neo-Nazis in it, but in terms of like
my taste,
the being made to feel horrified. But there are certain moments, and one of them happens like when this band shows up to play at this venue, and it is a moment of like, oh boy, they're really in it now. So let us begin. And we open on a van that has been driven into a cornfield.
Great start.
You know that your tour is going well when you wake up in your van. It is just in the middle of a cornfield. And we see the band inside wake up. It's Sam, Reese, Pat, and the driver, Tiger. And they all turn on Tiger. They're like, Tiger, why did you just pull over? You were asleep. And so apparently they were driving all night, and he was so tired, he just kind of veered off the road. And also he left the car on because he was asleep. So they are out of gas.
Out of gas.
They do not have money. This is a punk band from DC. They're called the Ain't Rights. They are like bootlegging it across America, playing punk shows like DIY. And it really is like shot so beautifully, even, you know, like before we get into what happens, that it really, I was like, I really do appreciate anyone who's involved in any DIY like art scene or any kind of community whatsoever. Like, God, everything is so fucking expensive.
And like, everything takes so much work.
Yeah, and to be, like, young and make the decision, like, we're just going to do this. There is, like, the romance of it. And, you know, again, before the events of the film really kick off, it is sort of like, to be young and, you know, like, in love with any kind of music or any kind of art. It's depicted in such a beautiful way, you know. But then there's also, like, at any point in time, your van can go off the fucking road, which is terrifying. And, like, you know none of these kids have health insurance.
No. I bet there's probably not even car insurance on that van.
Yeah, so it's, like, that is, unfortunately, like, in order to pursue art, we make it so impossible that you have to, like, endanger your own physical and mental health to do it. And I'm assuming just swapping chlamydia back and forth. And I don't say that as a critique, as someone who was part of the comedy scene in Brooklyn.
Right. No, it's that was a nonstop free-for-all.
Yeah, it was a game of telephone at a certain point, you know. But they need gas. So Pat, who's played by Anton Yelchin, and Sam, who's played by Aaliyah Shawkat, they hop on his bicycle or their shared bicycle. Because basically we find out they have no money, so they share a bicycle. It's in the back of the van. They all share one cell phone. So, like, is how the level of, like, they don't have any fucking money. And they bicycle to the nearest open establishment, which is a roller rink that's 11 miles away.
Oh, my God. An 11-mile bike ride? I'd be dead.
That alone, exactly. They sneak them to the nearest SUV, and they pull out a hose, and they start siphoning gas. So they have to, like, suck on the hose to, like, draw the gas out. And I kept saying, like, I literally just keep imagining these kids, like, being in a car accident, like, breaking a limb, having to make a splint, like not going to a doctor.
No, stressful.
But then you see them, they're driving along like the Pacific Northwest, like the coast of Oregon, and it's gorgeous. So it's like, that is why you do it. It's like you get to have these moments of beautiful art. It's an adventure. And that's really nice. And I wish I could just watch a movie about these kids making punk music, but that's not what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So they drive up, they're in like what seems to be Northern Oregon. So they're north of Portland. Mm-hmm. And they meet up with another young man. They're all supposed to be, like, college age. They meet up with a guy named Tad. And Tad is, like, deep into the punk scene. And that's another thing where it's, like, in order to make a scene, and I have a tiny experience of this, was, like, really realizing it was queer and then trying to make a queer community, is, like, you got to be on it. So this guy, Tad, is, like...
I mean, it's a full-time job.
Yeah, he's, like, connecting. Like, so he's, like, I don't know you. You're going to stay at my house tonight while I work the night shift. You could listen to my vinyl. You could drink my beer. Like, that's, like, the camaraderie of punks. Of, like, wherever you go to play a punk show, like, everyone's sleeping on each other's sofa. Like, everyone sort of got each other. Again, it's like, why do we make it so hard for people to, like, do anything that's not
You should be able to stay in a hotel for a night. Like, the four of you in a hotel room should be doable.
Just anything. Not have to siphon gas out of other people's tanks. But so, like, they're like, oh, great. We get to, like, actually sleep on a couch. And Tiger's going through Tad's vinyl, and he's like, damn, this guy's legit. Look at all this shit he has. Pat ends up going to bed, and Pat's sort of like a little more responsible. Mm-hmm. But the other ones stay up, and they just start to get slammered. And Pat wakes up in the morning and just says, Tad walks in to the apartment. He goes, oh, so you were the first to fall asleep? And he looks in the mirror, and they've just drawn, like, dicks all over his face.
Of course.
And Pat has to dry it off. So the idea of, like, they're in town, basically, they're going to be interviewed by Tad for his college radio station, and then they're going to play a punk show and get paid for it. Like, that's why they drove here. It's happening. Tad is recording their interview that will be then played at a later date for his college radio station. Their interview will also be published in a zine. And Tad's asking them, like, well, so why do you do what you do? And also he says, like, you don't really have a lot of social media presence, and you never put your live shows online. Why is that? And Ben has, like, a lot of, I think, very insightful, interesting things that I think would resonate for young people, where it's like,
when you take it all virtual, you lose the texture. You got to be there. The music is time and aggression.
Technical wizardry.
And it's shared live. And then it's over.
I mean, I feel that about stand-up.
I was just thinking, like, being in the room, seeing any kind of performance is so different. And especially, but, like, in my experience, stand-up, because then you get to actually feel the energy of it.
Yeah.
And then you put a video of it. It's like, no, you can't really perceive
it.
Yeah, it is so different. I was like, that was really interesting. And unfortunately, Allison, that does mean they don't have social media. And if they had social media, at least if they had put, like, say, an Instagram story up, they might have had a chance to, like, put some information out at a certain point. And Sam, you know, they're talking and interjects, like, so is this going to come out before the show? Like today? Like, should we be promoting the show? And Tad says, oh, well, that's the thing. The municipal center pulled my permit. Because the last show, there was some vomiting and there was some fecal matter. So there will actually not be a show, but don't worry, I found you another great show. And they're like, okay, good, because we drove fucking 90 miles all the way. We have no fucking gas. And he's like, no, don't worry, I got you hooked up. And before they go, he asks them, like, what is your desert island band? And they all say punk bands. They're like, oh, we live and breathe punk. We're fucking punk. And Tiger says, oh, the Misfits, obviously. And they all kind of go around. Tad takes them to the show. Allison, and he's like, I got you. You're going to get 50% of the door. You guys will headline. It is a Mexican restaurant. and they're playing for the 8 guys who you think would see a punk show at a Mexican restaurant.
Yep.
They're all like 19.
Not ideal.
But also, God bless those guys for showing up, you know, but like, you're not making money here, right? And afterwards, they confront Tad as they're loading up their equipment, and they say basically like, all told, and Tad gave them his part of the door, each person in the band made $6.87.
Oh, God. How many times did you get paid for stand-up and it was like in ones?
I mean, I feel like most, I barely ever got paid for stand-up.
Right.
Like, I tapped out. I mean, I definitely got paid, but I kind of tapped out before, where you were at, where you are genuinely like, because it is like a point where like now you're making, you can make real money off of stand-up.
Yes.
But then for a long time, you're making like $20 or something.
Yeah. You're like, there was pizza at the show. Like, okay.
There's pizza at the show, and then I stole some pizza. That's tomorrow. So really, I'm printing
2 days
money.
Worth of money and food.
So Reese, in a rage, grabs Tad and slams him against the door of the Mexican restaurant. He's like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. We don't even have enough gas to drive back to DC. Because that's kind of what their option is. Like, they do not have money to keep going. So they're going to have to just siphon gas across America from Oregon back to DC. And Tad says, no, I can get you an actual gig. My cousin lives sort of down near Portland, and I can get you an actual gig tomorrow. So it's a Sunday matinee gig. And they say, you better do it, Tad.
Sunday matinee, punk show.
Wait, say it again.
Sunday matinee, punk show.
Right.
Not the best scenario.
But I'm like, maybe that is a thing. And also, I do think that there should be more shows that are at 1 p.m. on a Sunday.
Yes, that's you what and Jamie I would, Lee Curtis.
Yeah, I'm with her, absolutely. And think of him as a poser. Like, you've made all these promises and you have all this expensive vinyl and you are so hooked up. But then when we actually show up, you can't, like,
fucked us.
Whatever. But I'm like, again, he's 20 years old. I'm sure he's doing, you know, he's trying. Yeah. So they wait outside his apartment. He runs up and he says, okay. So it's down near Portland, but it's kind of like a rural area. Matinee show. You go on at 3 p.m. You get $350. And they say, okay. All right. That's not nothing. So at least you get back to D.C., and then Tad says, all right, I'm going to be honest. I should warn you, it's mostly boots and braces down there. And Tiger says, well, I mean, what are we talking about? Like, skins? There's some at every show. And Pat is like, okay, so what are we talking about? Like, what kind of skinheads? Because there, unfortunately, like, there's a long tradition of skinheads and punk, both benevolent, positive, like, actual, I don't want to say actual, like, anarchists, but, like, punks who are outside the system and critiquing it, or punks who are using the aesthetic to just propagate the same white supremacist, like, garbage that is a part of every culture, you know? And, you know, Ted says, you know, I guess they're right wing. I guess they're technically, they're so right wing, they're technically ultra left, which, like, you don't want to hear that. If that's how far extreme, they're like, I don't actually know what they believe. What that is not good, right? You should be able to generally say what these people are about. And don't worry, we'll find out. But he's like, don't worry, they're not like affiliated with any movements. And his cousin, so Tad's cousin Daniel, who lives down there, he's like, he's a regular guy. I can vouch for him. Just maybe don't bring up politics. Allison, this is where I'm headed out. I'm not fucking going. Yeah. Like, this is already.
I don't want to go anywhere where the warning is like, just don't talk about anything that's going on, because, like, whatever you feel, they feel differently. Like, I can't, I'm like, then I'm not going.
And I do think, like, that is something probably in the punk scene that does again, we have no idea, obviously. You know how we live.
I don't know one thing about the punk scene.
But, like, it's sort of like, I imagine the, like, a lot of spaces where it's like, do you either give up that space to, like, racists and skinheads, or do you try to, like, force them out of the scene? You know, and there's, like, again, a long tradition of that.
Yeah.
But also,
both
it's like
feel hard and bad.
Absolutely. And also, like, you're not from there. Like, it's like, if you live there, then, like, fuck them. I could see being like, I'm going to go to the show and, like, play and fuck these motherfuckers.
But
if you're
not
just in town, you don't know anyone else, that's scary.
No, that's very scary.
But Sam says, okay, so just to be explicitly clear, these guys aren't burning crosses. And Todd says, no, you'll be good. But again, Tad also is not.
Also, like,
from
that's
there.
Not the only bar. Like, that, like, there's a lot that happens between perfectly normal person and burning crosses that is terrible.
And I guess at the end of the day, they need money to drive back across America.
Right. I get they're desperate. And, like, again, like, also talking about, like, I would avoid that space. I wouldn't do that is a place of privilege. Of
absolutely.
Like, well, I don't
to
need
even,
to do that.
To even just say, like, leave and be like, again, they're 20 years old. Like, oh, leave and get money where? Like, what the fuck are you talking about, right? So we want to be absolutely clear about that. Tad also hands them, like, a hand-drawn poster he made, which has, like, their, like, Ain't Right is the name of their band, and then, like, Cowcatcher is the headlining band. And everyone's like, all right, like, say we will about Tad, but, like, this is a very cool poster. So they take it with them. They're like, okay, this is, like, a cool, like, a memento or, like, a thing for our band.
Yeah.
And Tad's like, I actually would go with you, but my cousin's actually, like, he'll meet you, but then he's actually going to come back up and stay with me, and his girlfriend is going to come with him. So I they're coming back here. So
it's like a handoff.
Yeah. So so the band gets in the van, and they drive through the night, and they're just, like, farting and laughing about it. And they stop to build a fire on the beach, and they, like, drink beers. And again, it's, like, a beautiful little moment in a young person's life. And it's nice to see that they're going to enjoy it, because what's about to happen is going to push those memories out of their head really fast.
Oh, boy.
So they arrive at the venue. It's, like, you know, again, like, 2 p.m., right? They drive past a chained-up gate, and Allison, they're in the middle of fucking nowhere. Like, this looks like where I'm from. Like, very green, very beautiful, just pickup trucks, nothing.
I don't like it.
I was going to say, my first thought was, oh, I wouldn't bring a Jewish person out here.
No.
Certainly wouldn't. You just don't know what's going on.
No.
And there's, I would say where I grew up, I'm sure there were punks, but we didn't, like, it's clear, like, rural Ohio. Like, I think there wasn't as much leather. The punks weren't turning a look quite as hard as these people. But they park, and there's, like, a ton of people coming out. It looks like it's a pretty big music venue in the middle of nowhere. And they park, and they meet cousin Daniel, and right off the bat, Daniel is extremely weird and on edge. And Tiger mentions in passing, like, oh, yeah, I know you're going up to stay with Tad, with your girlfriend. And Daniel not only grabs him, he grabs him by the throat. Daniel grabs Tiger by the throat and says, do not fucking bring that up. Allison, we're not punk, but if someone put their hand on my throat, someone who I just met, I would go fucking ballistic.
I would punch them in the head and, like, kick them in the balls.
And there is something where it's like, yeah, like, to be young and to be in a desperate situation, it's like you can't have boundaries. Like, you're forced to pass through your boundaries of comfort all the time. So everyone can tell this is fucked up, but it's like being in these spaces with, like, super aggro men especially, I'm sure this is not the most aggressive somebody has acted towards them. So, like, Tiger is obviously taken aback, but they're not going to not play the show, you know?
Right.
But Pat sees it, and he's really unnerved. So they load in, and the place is popping for 1 p.m. Like, it is full of people who, at a glance, are, like, look like punks. And then if you look a little closer, they absolutely all have shaved heads. And, the name, also, they've got the band's name wrong on the venue. It says the Art Rights instead of the Eight Rights. The venue guy.
Disrespectful.
Yeah. The guy for the venue, Gabe, shows them the green room, which is a windowless little space with, like, a couch and beers. Yeah, like, just graffiti on the wall. And, of course, a Confederate flag.
Yeah.
But again, we're just putting it up for the ambiance, you know?
I guess. Who knows what? Yeah.
And Gabe tells them, sound check in 15, you're on in 20, and do not block the hallway. The owner is a freak about fire safety, so get everything either in the green room or on stage. And once they close the door, Pat asks Tiger, like, are you okay? I saw Daniel grab you. But Tiger, of course, has to be, like, punk and, like, hardcore. He's totally like, I don't, fine. You know. Again, a rule about horror, never brush off a throat grab.
Yes. That's the first sign of danger.
If somebody's grabbing your throat, it should be consensually. And hopefully, if they're grabbing you as hard as Daniel did, maybe have a conversation first, you know.
I would have a conversation about that.
But they all could tell, and Sam says that sums it up. These guys are fucking creeps, you know. And Reese jokes, these guys run a tight ship, except it's a U-boat. Then Pat says, "Hey guys, I've got an idea." Allison, they take the stage, and Sam can see that Pat is now sweating, and tells Sam, "This was your idea. Don't back the fuck out now." And I'm going to tell everyone here you're Jewish. Allison, they start their
set. That is so scary.
Yeah, I mean, again, to even be in these spaces.
Even as a joke. Like,
yeah. And shout out to any punk who has gone into these spaces and, like, held your ground. Obviously, we don't know enough about it, but it's like, you shouldn't have to cede spaces, but also don't go to this place. To be able to make that, I imagine, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but it's like, white supremacy, Christian white supremacy pervades every place. So imagine a place where is this site of masculine aggression is a place for people to try to, like, put that into the space. Anywho, Allison, they start playing a punk song so famous even I knew what it was. Nazi Punks Fuck Off by the Dead Kennedys.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't clear if this was a neo-Nazi skinhead bar before, it is now, because you see people are literally pissed. People are fucking throwing beer bottles, spitting beer.
Such a young person's move to be like, I have 100%. An idea. Let's piss off all these Nazis.
100%. And also, like, it is punk and it is cool. So, like,
it is
you
punk
are
and
right.
cool, but you're going to die. Also,
there's four of you and, like, 50, 60 fucking skinheads in this bar.
No.
And they're all, like, of course, like, there's some women, but, like, it's mostly angry young white men who start, like, moving around the crowd. And also, like, again, not being punk, but, like, people want to dance. And I guess if you're in the punk scene, that means, like, you have to start thrashing around. Like, you can't just, like, you know, dance in place. And if you're a neo-Nazi and you're listening, please don't. And if you are, I just want to let you know, fucking kill yourself.
Kill yourself.
In case there's any question, you're like, ah, should I kill myself? Go ahead if you're a neo-Nazi. Go ahead and kill yourself. And during the song, Pat sees Daniel walk over to a brunette who we find out later is his girlfriend, Emily, and hands her a big fat wad of cash. Which, again, you're in a neo-Nazi bar, then people are passing around big old fat wads of cash, Allison. That's where I'm like,
really bad is going on here.
And she's with her friend.
As if that wasn't already very obvious.
Yeah, once you have neo-Nazism and money together, well, that's historically, that's when things start to really hit the fan.
Yeah, unravel.
Ooh, and so she's with her friend Amber. So, Pat sees this, but he, you know, doesn't know. Daniel doesn't know what it is. Gabe, the venue guy, also notices this exchange. Somebody else throws a beer. However, Allison, this is the nature of punk. When they start to play their next song, which is called Coronary, the neo-Nazis get into it, and then everyone just starts, like, slamming around the pit. And it's just, like,
a good
shot.
Band is a good band.
Yeah, it speaks to us across the human experience, unfortunately, including the neo-Nazi experience.
They shouldn't get to enjoy things.
Absolutely, yeah. Their heads should explode the second they feel any sort of happiness.
Yes.
But there's this beautiful slow-motion shot of, like, again, this incredible, like, energy of all these young men, like, dancing in this, like, really aggressive way, and it's like they put there's classical music over it, so it's like, again, shot in this beautiful, like, reverential way that I thought was really affecting. And also, I think, like, explains why you would do this, right? Like, it's like, yeah, this seems like a bad situation, but then when you do play it, it gives this, like, you give people this experience,
yeah,
and you get to experience exactly, like, that's why you do comedy, that's why either of us write, like, you do get to experience that, which is so gratifying. Allison, they're done. Crushed it. They head back to the green room. They find out that all their shit's already in the hallway. And they're like, what about the fire codes you told us about?
Yeah.
The bouncer, his name is Big Justin, and he's played by this actor, Eric Edelstein, who's in a bunch of stuff,
Yeah, I saw him in the trailer. He's like, he's one of those also, like, there's certain guys in the air, it's specifically men, I think, that fill this role where, like, sometimes he plays, like, the goofiest comedy role ever.
Yes.
And then sometimes he's the most terrifying, like, dark drama, and there's almost nothing in between. It's this, like, it's just, there's, like, three or four guys who, like, do this, and I'm always, like, every time you see them, you're like, whoa, this is so different than the last time I saw you, which was, like, goofing off with
in
a bunch
Hotel
of, like,
for Dogs. Yeah. In Hotel for Dogs, Alexander, the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. He's in Jurassic World. This is the first time I saw him, and I thought he was great. Like, I remember seeing this thing, they'd be like,
terrific.
That guy's menacing, but, like, very funny and a great actor.
Yeah.
So he tells them, hey, sorry, we had to clear it out to make room for the headliner, Cowcatcher. And again, Big Justin gets handed a big, fat wad of cash.
Okay. But so there's a lot of money moving around.
A lot of money moving around, Allison. A lot of neo-Nazis, a lot of money.
Ooh.
So he pays the band, they grab their shit, and they're about to head out, almost scot-free, except Sam realizes, shit, I plugged in the phone. We have to get it. It's our only fucking cell phone.
Yeah, you do need to get that, actually.
Pat's
there's,
like,
a lot of things I'd be like, it doesn't matter, just move on and leave.
Right, if it's a
not
charger,
the one
we'll
phone.
Figure it out, yeah. Pat says, no problem. And, like, before Big Justin can react, opens the door of the green room and steps inside. He grabs the phone and the charger. He turns and sees Amber, the blonde from earlier, and Cowcatcher, which is a group of men who are the next punk band who are going to go up, standing over the dead body of Emily, who is Daniel's girlfriend, who just received that wad of cash. Allison, there's a knife buried in her skull up to the hilt. And Amber looks at Pat and says, can you call 911? Like, immediately. And Pat starts to dial and makes the call and runs out of the hallway. Immediately, Justin and Gabe are on top of him.
Yeah.
Seeing this, the other band members run over to be like, what the fuck's going on? And Gabe says, you know, takes the phone and tells Justin, like, to stay with them. We see Gabe walk outside to a trailer. And so there's, like, a trailer behind the venue. Allison, he walks the trailer and immediately walks back out with something in his pocket. It's, of course, a fucking gun.
Yeah.
He and Justin corral the band into the green room. So they're in the green room not only with the dead body, but with Cowcatcher, the other band, and Amber.
Okay.
Gabe has the phone, and he sees that—
And Gabe is the one— Sorry, like, the names are all a little similar. Oh, he's the one who, like, set up this gig for them.
So, Gabe is just the guy who works for the venue.
The venue. Okay, yes.
Yes. So Gabe's just— And then Justin is the bodyguard.
The bodyguard, yeah.
So they kind of corral the guys, and then Gabe has the phone, and 911 is calling him back because the call went through. It's calling him back. So he gets it. He steps outside and said there's been a stabbing. When he returns, Justin asks, did you call Darcy? And Gabe's like, yeah, he's coming. He knows about what happened, but not about this whole shit show, right?
Oh, God.
Tiger's really like, you can't make us stay here. We didn't do anything wrong. Like, what the fuck is going on? Gabe, unfortunately, has a gun, right? Mm-hmm. And Gabe informs them, we aren't keeping you here. You're just staying. And he tells them, I called the cops. The cops are on their way. We will sort all this out. Of course, we know that that is absolutely— cops are on the way, but they are not going to be able to sort this out.
No.
So we see Gabe go back to the trailer where we see Clark, who is the money man of the organization that we're going to find out controls this venue. And you better believe it is, of course, a neo-Nazi organization.
Yeah, you bet.
Because I was also like, who else can afford to have a music venue in the middle of fucking nowhere, Oregon?
Yeah.
Like someone who are making money doing other illegal fucking things. So we see Clark there, who's kind of the money guy, as well as, as we find out, he's the dog trainer. He trains their attack dogs for the organization.
Also, like, dogs.
I know. Don't bring dogs into it. And there's a lot of dogs, and they're doing a lot of bad stuff, Allison. But we'll get to that in a minute. It's on the dog's fault. And Clark, he's like, hey, can I get $600? And Money Man's like, I just gave you the money to pay the band. And he's like, things have gone awry.
Oh, I would say.
Yeah. Clark asks, okay, well, do you need anything else? And Gabe replies, a true believer. And Clark says, how about two? Again, you hate to hear it. Mm-mm. You don't want to hear somebody calling up two true believers, Allison.
No. Nope. Never, not one, definitely not two.
Meanwhile, back in the green room, everyone's just standing there awkwardly. And Sam says, well, I mean, do we even know if she's actually dead? And I think it's a fair point. Like, it's in her head, but, like, there's no blood. Like, she could still be alive if the cops get here.
Right.
And then one of the cowcatcher performers reaches down and pulls the knife out of Emily's head, but pulls it, like, it's in so deep that it drags her body along with the force.
Oh.
And when he pulls out, it just fucking jettisons blood out of the wound.
Yeah.
And he says, well, there it
She's
is.
Dead.
And again, you hate to see it and you hate to hear it. It's both seeing the blood and also seeing that somebody would do that, then turn to you and say, there it is. Oh, you don't like to see that.
You don't like that. Too nonchalant.
We also find out, and I'll just say this now, we find out that this person who pulled the knife out, his name is Worm with an E. And I did look up the spelling of it.
W-E-R-M?
Yes, Worm. And I believe he's the front man of Cowcatcher, but I could be wrong.
Sure.
Could it be one of the other vital
roles?
Front man
energy, that's for sure.
Meanwhile, we find out why Gabe needed two true believers, which is he has paid a pair of creepy identical skinheads, one of which has an 88 tattoo on his hand. Like, they all have, Nazi fucking tattoos, like, in case it's not clear. And he basically tells them, I'm going to need you, one of you, to get stabbed. So when the cops show up, we'll say, well, this is with stabbing. So we're going to make a fictional stabbing a stabbing.
It's people who are willing to get injured for this cause.
Yeah, I know. So, of course, the cops do show up, but Gabe's like, yeah, sorry, this is a punk show. Somebody got stabbed. These are the two guys. They know they're brothers. Like, they were just drunk. And the cops presumably know about this venue. It was like, yeah, okay, that sounds about right. We're going to get the fuck out of here because we are terrified of you people. And we're not actually going to do anything. Just then, as the cops arrive, Allison, the owner of the venue, Darcy Banker, shows up. He steps out of his car, and Allison, what beloved older white male actor plays Darcy, do you think?
Oh, no.
I'll give you a hint. Sci-fi.
Patrick Stewart?
It is Patrick fucking Stewart, Allison.
Oh.
Patrick fucking Stewart plays the head of this neo-Nazi organization that controls this
venue.
Oh,
that's so scary.
And what
I could see him being incredible. Really terrifying.
He's terrifying. And he's also like, everyone else looks like a punk. He has like a newsboy hat. Like he's like dressed like an older established man because like he is, unfortunately, like we live in a country where this kind of stuff does happen. It's like, this is like his cause. A lot of these people who are part of this are like disaffected, lonely, young men who want to
joining
community.
Up for something.
This guy is not that. This guy is the head of this monster. And so he has to come in and sort of control everything. Which is funny because, like, boy, if you think you can control a neo-Nazi organization and have it work out well, again, that's just not what history suggests. I think things start to fall apart at a certain point. But what a thrill to see Patrick Stewart. Gabe returns to the green room and says, tells the band Cowcatcher, you are going to leave. The other band says, okay, so we can leave too? What the fuck? Unfortunately, they are still being kept there. Worm goes up to Pat and again, is terrifying. And Worm, before the Cowcatcher leaves, he says, what was the name of your second song, second to last song? And Pat says, Toxic Evolution. And Worm says, yeah, that's a hard song, man. That's the one I did her to. And then just fucking leaves, leaving the Eight Rights and Amber still locked in the green room. And Justin, who is still inside, so Justin, who again is massive, has a gun, locks the fucking door behind them. So they are locked inside with Justin. There is, basically they would have to get through a huge person who is also armed.
Armed, yeah. And then get past a bunch of others, like, you know.
Exactly.
Would, like, had they not left the phone in there and not gone in and seen that scene, do you think that they were going to let, was the plan to let them just leave?
Yeah.
Oh, I think they would just let them play. That's, like, even worse. Like, if you were lured there and it was like, we're going to make scapegoats out of you, we're going to use you as a foil, like, then it's like, oh, you couldn't do anything. But it's, like, all just like, oh, if we just had our phone.
Exactly. I think it is a totally just, like, they probably have bands come play there all the time. They is not, if anything, having other bands that are not a part of the scene gives them more legitimacy. Like, it makes like, oh yeah, we just run a music venue.
Totally.
We're clearly laundering money through it.
Obviously.
But,
why is there so much cash?
Well, we'll find out, Allison. And let me tell you, it's not a good reason. It was not a good reason at all. But yes, I think unfortunately the truth is, it was just like wrong place, wrong time. Right.
Right.
Reese is the sort of the loose cannon, and he's in Justin's face screaming, like demanding to leave. But he's like, you all better shut the fuck up. Outside, we see Darcy and Gabe. They're trying to do damage control. They're saying, okay, like, who knows the band's here? Daniel, Tad, did anyone know their location? And that's why I was like, if only they had Instagram stories, they could at least have put like the venue. So when they disappear, you know, or if they were to disappear, Darcy is furious at Worm. But also takes time to take a dig at Gabe for not visiting Worm in prison. He's like, you know, that would have really meant a lot to him. So clearly these are people who have known each other for years.
Yeah.
And are
through
part
the ups
of this
and downs
scene. The idea
of
that
white supremacy.
Right. Like the idea that like essentially like your father figure is mad at you for not visiting your brother in arms and the arms are in white supremacy in prison.
Ugh.
And Darcy says, do you see a way out of this? And Gabe replies, I mean, for them. They go to the back of a van and they open it and another neo-Nazi offers them a bag of hoses. And Darcy says, okay, I think this could work. And he says to one of the other goons, is there a no trespassing sign up at the property? And the goon replies, oh, there's a beware of dogs sign. Mm. Darcy says, oh, even better. Meanwhile, in the green room, the band basically is like, there doesn't seem to be any other way out of here. We have to make a run for it. They can't kill all of us, right?
I feel like they can.
Right, especially if you're locked in a green room. If he has five bullets, he could absolutely kill all of you.
Right, and you'd have to go by him. And even if you get, if one of you makes it down that hallway, like, there's no way you make it beyond that.
There also is, like, you don't know what's going on outside. So
right, exactly.
You don't know. This could be the best time. And we know that Darcy and Gabe are cooking up what to do. So to give them more time is disadvantageous for you.
Yes.
But, of course, I didn't know that in the moment. That's, like, easy for us to say.
It's a Schrodinger's cat almost.
Yeah. But Reese is ready to fucking, you know, again, like run up against Justin and basically force their way out of it. And Justin pulls his gun on them, is screaming at them. Just as Gabe comes to the door and shouts, "Darcy's here." And Justin immediately drops his gun. He's like, "Oh my God, why didn't you just tell me?" Like, okay, oh, thank God. Darcy will handle it. Like, everyone is so relieved that Darcy has arrived.
Thank God for Darcy.
Oh, Darcy's here. And so Gabe instructs Justin, empty the bullets out of the gun and then give the band the gun as like a gesture of good faith, but you keep the bullets. So you cannot harm them, and they know that. Darcy from the other side of the door also apologizes profusely and is like, you know, basically like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. You know how things are in the punk scene. Like, this escalated. We're going to handle this. We are so sorry. We just want you to know, like, my men mishandled the situation, but like, you are going to be safe." Obviously all bullshit, and they all know that. Like, there's no way this could de-escalate the way that everyone is handling it, right?
No, definitely not.
But eventually, Pat's basically like, "We want the bullets. We will not let you open the door with just the gun." But they're arguing back and forth, and finally, Justin hands over the gun, keeping the bullets. The band says through the door, "So where are the police?" Of
Great
course,
question.
The police have already come and fucking gone, you know? Yeah. And Sam says, "Pat, do the math," which I thought was a funny way to put it. It's like, "Do the math, bitch, the cops aren't coming." But so now they have a gun, but they have to assume everyone else has a gun. So yes. It's like, should they open the door for Darcy and company while holding a bulletless gun, or should they stay in the room until the cops, quote unquote, show up? But Justin's there, and they don't know this, but a growing pack of neo-Nazis are assembling at the venue. Ugh. This is a lose-lose situation, baby.
Yeah.
And Darcy tells him through the door, "I just want to make sure that no one else gets hurt." There is no way they believe it, fortunately. Luckily, that means they're like, fuck this. So Allison, Reese, and Tiger attack Justin because he no longer has the gun. And Justin's huge, but they are still multiple people, and they're able to wrestle him to the ground. And fortunately, it turns out that Reese did wrestling in high school, so he's able to get him into, like, a leg, I don't know what you call it, where, like, he has his legs wrapped around Justin's throat.
Whatever that is. I know what you mean.
And his arm bent back. So Justin is incapacitated on the ground.
Yes.
The others rush over and grab the bullets and load the gun.
Okay.
And then they shove the couch in front of the door. And Pat shouts to the door, "We are going to stay in the green room until the cops come, and that's it. And we have Justin in here." Outside,
not
we hear
a bad plan.
No, exactly. I mean, considering the other options, which are we open the door and absolutely
we all
murdered
die.
By Patrick Stewart. Outside, Gabe says to Darcy, "Do you think they know? Do you think they know, Allison?"
No.
AKA, do you think they know why we have all this money? Meanwhile, Reese is holding Big Justin in a wrestling grip, but eventually they let him sit up at gunpoint and sit on the couch.
Yeah.
And they're asking Amber, who's obviously like from there, like knows it. It's like, "Do you know there's another way out but the door?" She's like, "No, dude, there's not even a bathroom in the green room."
Oh God.
There's no
green
windows. Allison, I was like this. I mean, truly, like you could just smell watching this. You could smell what that green room would smell like.
Yeah.
Outside, we see Darcy and Gabe conferring with Clark, the dog trainer. And basically what their plan is that they're going to kill the band in the green room, but do it without bullets. So, like, they'll be stabbed to death or there'll be some sort of soft tissue damage.
Yeah.
Then they will stage their deaths at their second location. Kind of, they call it the residence, but it's sort of like clearly like their compound.
Yeah.
Stage the death to look like they had crept onto the property to steal gas. Like, that's what the hoses were.
Yeah.
And then we're attacked by the neo-Nazis' guard dogs.
They
it's
have
a full
this
proof
plan, so
plan
ready. It's a good plan for them, but like, it's like they were planning that they were going to need to do this.
Allison, they may have had to do this in the past for something. I mean, for somebody.
Yeah.
But then they start like, okay, we have to move the van. Of course, they don't have the van keys. The van keys are with the band also in the green room. So it's like, oh, now we have to like deal with all the logistics. And that's why everyone looks at Darcy because of like, again, he is the father figure of this organization. But also he has clearly done this before.
Yes.
And as he's sort of storming through the venue, he points at all the equipment in the hallway. He's like, "That's a fire hazard." So they go to find Daniel. Again, Tad's cousin who was there to like help the band set up the show. Allison, unfortunately, he absolutely isn't in the neo-Nazi gang. He is not. Daniel is just a part of this too, you know?
Yeah. I figured someone along the chain.
Yeah. Which also was like, oh, but then we could figure out like, oh, he told Tiger to shut up about him going to stay with Tad. And also like his car, like he has like a really nice new car. Mm-hmm. And I, for me, that was enough to be like, oh, he's trying to get out. I think he's trying to get out of there. I think he's going to take some stuff and leave.
Ooh.
So that was what I sort of picked up. And then we'll find out more about it. But that does mean that Daniel has a little bit more of a complicated relationship with the neo-Nazis, which is good for the band.
Yes.
And Darcy tells Daniel, we need your help with someone, and this will only involve red laces from here on out. And I was trying to read about this. I don't know to the degree in which it was literally true. Reddit had some contradictory info, but I guess there is this real thing where at certain time periods, it seems like maybe it was the UK, that if you were a punk with red laces, that was an indication that you were part of like a neo-Nazi or like Aryan organization.
You were part of it.
You were part of it. So in this organization, if you have red laces, it means not only like you're a part of it, but you have risen to the ranks of like, we will trust you with something like this.
Okay.
A true believer, if you will.
Okay. Ugh.
Daniel's at that point, right? So, which makes sense. Like if Daniel's a red laces, that makes sense if he is considering leaving or, you know, try to go stay at his cousin's.
He might have some money and have,
Yeah. So like that would be versus like someone who just got there 2 weeks ago, you know?
Right.
For example, Gabe is doing a lot of this, but Gabe does not have red laces. So Gabe is sort of, I think, maybe a try hard. Like Gabe is like really trying to get red laces. Yeah, like a fucking poser. And I was going to say, it's insane that punks would have to deal with this, but unfortunately, white Christian supremacy creeps into every fucking community, like every the infection community. It is. So then every community has to constantly work against it. So of course it would happen in the punk community. That makes sense.
Of course.
So meanwhile, the band is basically tearing apart the green room to try to figure something out. So they rip out the light fixture, which gives them like a big piece of metal that they can use that as a weapon. But then once they get through the drop ceiling, it's just like wires and metal. Like they can't get up anywhere. Tiger realizes that he thinks he could see daylight because it's still like late. It's like about to be evening, but like it was early enough. He's like, I think I see daylight beneath this particular part of the floorboards. So he writes a X with a Sharpie marker, and they're like, maybe we could try to get through the floorboards to get out of it, get out of here. Amber says that they're talking to Amber like, so do you have a phone? Like, what do you know about this venue? And unfortunately, they also took her phone. So they search Emily's body. They go through Emily's coat.
I mean, listen,
if I was dead, I'd want you to look for my phone, you know, if you need it.
If you need to use my phone and I've been stabbed in the head, you could use it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me now.
I'm dead.
I'm in the ocean with Jesus.
We're dating.
And we see she has cigarettes, a lighter, and then a napkin with the words Fleischwolf on it. So that'll come up later.
I bet.
They also have Big Justin turn out his pockets at gunpoint, looking specifically for a phone. They're like, if we physically can't get out of this room, some motherfucker has to have a phone in here. And we see, reluctantly, Justin throws out his switchblade under the ground and then his wallet. And finally, he takes out a flip phone. And everyone lunges and gasps at the same moment. And Justin snaps it in half and crushes it before they can grab it. Allison, suddenly the lights go out. What would you do?
What would you do?
I'm out of there. I'm making a run for it, and they can try and kill me, and they probably will, and that's fine.
Yeah, I there's just no other way around it. Like, if you physically
can't... The longer you're in there,
yeah,
you're not accomplishing anything. You're just giving them more... you said, like, the longer you wait, the better the scenario is for them out there. So it's like, just like... bolt through the door with the gun and just start running until you get to the van, and like whoever can make it, just fucking leave.
Absolutely.
That's it.
I completely agree. That's all you can do. Yes.
For years, I just dreaded going to the dentist. But at Advanced Dentistry, I don't have to. First and foremost, they want you to feel comfortable when you walk in. Like, you'll feel it. Whereas in the past, I might have gone into the dentist and thinking, I might feel some pain at some point. But with IV sedation, it can be something that you don't dread.
If you've been avoiding the dentist because of fear, worry, or just not wanting to be judged, you're not alone. Visit nofeardentist.com to learn how IV sedation can change your life.
Save big money on everything for your next project. Now at Menards. Spring is here, meaning time for outdoor projects. Cabot Australian Timber Oil is perfect for decks, siding, and outdoor furniture while providing maximum penetration, durability, and water repellency. Save big money on Cabot exterior stains to get your staining project started today. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
So everything is plunged into darkness, and Amber, who thinks fast, and she lights a cigarette and gives it to Justin, who does take it and starts smoking it. And she tells Reese, like, just watch the cherry on the cigarette. If it moves in a way you don't like, just shoot him. And Sam says, wow, you're pretty smart for a Nazi. And Amber gives what I think is probably a pretty rote neo-Nazi answer, which is, I'm not a neo-Nazi, but the people who hurt me weren't white. And Pat says, well, it's funny you say that, Amber, because I think we've got a real white problem here tonight. And it was just sort of like, oh, one person, and now you've become a neo-Nazi?
Right.
Well, what about all these fucking white people who are about to murder us here, Amber? Yeah. What about them?
What about them?
We see the power goes back on, and we realize that it was cut to the venue basically to have everyone else leave, because people are still there, like,
right,
trying to, like,
was the other band, they were done. No,
they were done, but people were just like drinking and like bar. Just like it was a regular bar again. And so they shut Darcy shut the power off and then says, hey, sorry, everyone. We've like the generator is acting up. So next Sunday, free drinks 2 to 4. And everyone's like, yay. And then he says, Allison, which again, fucking chilling. He says, so remember, the racial advocacy workshop is on Wednesday, unless you hear it differently. And remember, it's not a party. It's a movement.
Ooh.
So that's how fucking organized this is. This is not your run-of-the-mill
seminars.
Five disgusting guys, like in a basement or whatever. This is, he has been building this. Like, this is his life's work, which is terrifying because there are those people who are committed to 100%. This kind of thing. And in America, it's so scary to think about. So everyone leaves just to like get everyone there out of there except for like the main crew of Red Laces. And Daniel is sort of like assembling everybody. Daniel still doesn't know what's going on. So at this point, he does not know who's doing what, who has been killed, right? So he's just following orders, the things the neo-Nazis love most of all. He's just following
favorite
them.
Thing.
Meanwhile, we see Worm is still there. Like, they got him out of there, and he's wasted, and is kind of acting up. So Darcy has Gabe go get some packets of heroin out of their safe.
Obviously.
And he's like, I want Cowcatcher, the band. I want them to just hole up for a few days until this all blows over. And if we could give them as much heroin so they don't really remember exactly what was happening, I think we should be fine.
I mean, horrible, but again, not the worst idea when it comes to like just meeting your own needs.
Yeah. And again, he's someone where it's like he was mad at Gabe for not visiting Worm in prison. You know, like he's like, we'll just have them hole up. And then Gabe looks at the packaging and it has like a different fake gang that's a black gang.
Yeah.
And he says like, why is this here? And basically he says it's like plausible deniability, like fake packaging. If this gets found, they can't trace it back to us. And specifically we'll blame a black gang.
Jesus Christ.
But of course somebody like this
would
do.
Organized and awful.
I know. Right. It's like, how do you combat something where it's organized entirely about the most depraved level of hate imaginable?
Yeah.
It's hard to understand.
Very.
But they give the packets to Worm and the rest of Cowcatcher and push them out the door. Back in the green room, Tiger has like sort of is trying to start scrabble at the floorboards to try to get to like where he thinks he could see daylight. Darcy comes back and says, hey, everyone. So the police did come and go. What can I do to resolve this? And Amber says, at this point, see if we could trade the gun for a cell phone. And Sam's like, we're not going to give them a gun. It's like, they have other guns. If they were just going to fire through the door and kill us, they would have done that already. We know they haven't done that because they don't want bullet holes in the body, right? That's the only reason they haven't shot them yet.
Right.
And we'll see how long they stick to that plan, unfortunately.
I gotta believe not that long.
Yeah. And Darcy says,
for all I know, I come to my place of business and there is an out-of-town band locked in a room with an unregistered firearm.
Oh, someone come on!
There. And I maybe there's a hostage, too.
Like, I just want the gun out of the equation, everybody. Like, I just want the gun out of there. It's too dangerous, right? They argue, and Amber's like, fuck that. Just fire through the door. Fuck this. We can't be doing this. Of course, because she knows the neo-Nazis.
Right.
And they decide they have no other option. So they put Justin back in a sleeper hold. They move the couch away from the door. And they empty the gun out so it's not loaded. They open a door crack and
Why did they do that?
Basically to hand off the gun in exchange for a cell phone.
To make the trade. Okay, got it.
Again, we know it's not. That's not really what's going to happen.
No, of course.
But they're desperate. So they're like, okay, we'll trade the empty gun for a cell phone. As soon as they open the door crack, Amber can look out and see the red laces. And because she is a neo-Nazi, knows what that means. And she screams, they're killing us. Like, if these people are here, we're fucking dead.
Oh, my God. It's so scary. Like, obviously, you know that the whole time.
Yes.
Like, they're killing. But, like, to be like, well, it's here.
Exactly.
It's so terrifying.
These are, like, just 20-year-olds from D.C. who are just trying to, like, play in a band.
Music.
And so the band tries to jam the door shut. And not only do the Nazis grab the gun out of Pat's hand, they also just start slashing up Pat's arm, like, horrifically, like, deep lacerating cuts to the point where one of Pat's hands is barely hanging on by the tendons. And in the fight, as soon as Justin hears all this, Justin tries to get up. Reese ends up snapping Justin's arm. So they're able to get the door closed, but they now do not have a phone or a gun. Pat's arm is fucked to hell, and Justin is enraged.
Yeah.
So Justin is up, and he grabs for his switchblade on the floor.
Glad that's still in play.
Unfortunately, luckily, Reese is able to put him in a chokehold until he's unconscious. But then he wakes up again, and Reese has to choke him out again. And through the door, Darcy tells everyone, this will all be over soon. And Sam's panicking, like, how long do you have to choke someone? Like, if we keep choking Justin, he's going to keep waking up. Allison, without a word, Amber leans forward with the switchblade and just slits Justin's belly from, like, waist to sternum, killing him. So at this point, basically, Darcy's outside and finally reveals that Emily is in there. Emily and Justin are the hostages. Daniel did not know Emily was in there, and Emily is obviously, like, his girlfriend. I don't know if they were official, but, like, clearly they were going to escape together that night.
Well, that's not happening.
So he knows that she's been stabbed, but the way that Darcy's telling it is that Justin and Emily are alive. So he's like, what the fuck are we doing? We got to get the fuck in there.
Mm-mm.
Unfortunately, of course, Darcy's, hard to believe as a neo-Nazi not being completely forthcoming with all of his employees. But Darcy's thing is like, so not only do we have to be prepared what's happening here, we have to then take the bodies as we get them and be prepared to, like, set up the crime scene at the second location. So again, he's trying to, like, handle everything at the same time. And again, there's at least a dozen dedicated true believer neo-Nazis there who are willing to do literally anything.
Anything.
He says. So in desperation, they follow Tiger's lead and they smash through the floorboards thinking, like, okay, we can still see this light. Maybe it's a basement. Allison, I don't have to fucking tell you, it's a fucking heroin lab.
Of course it is.
And that's what this all is about. It's not about them. It's not even about Emily getting stabbed. It's that if they cannot just murder all of these people, because then the cops will actually have to investigate and we'll find they're running a huge heroin ring.
Yeah, obviously.
So, of course, they drop down into the lab. Of course, it's built like a bunker, so they can't just get out like a normal door. And Pat is too injured to go down. And as Amber drops down,
are there people in the lab? No.
No, there's no one there right now, yeah. And Pat tells Amber as she drops down, like, I'm sorry about your friend. But she doesn't say anything. So they cannot get out, Allison, but they do find a roll of duct tape. So when they come back up, they kind of duct tape Pat's arm together, which is, hey, best you could do. You know, at least it's kind of put together again.
It's not hanging off.
Yeah. And Pat's like, they cannot just kill us. That would draw attention, like, to the lab, but they're still going to kill us, which means we have to be found dead. So it's like, whatever's going to happen, they're not going to just come in and shoot us. It's going to be fucking horrible.
Yeah.
And he tells this amazing story about, like, going to somebody's bachelor party and playing paintball with, like, a team of ex-Marines that happened to be there. And everyone's like, okay, dude, cool. Fun. I don't know if this is, like, helpful in this moment. And so they decide, which we just said, they're going to unlock the door and fucking run for it. Like, there's nothing. What could you do?
This is it.
And they all grab, like, makeshift weapons. Like, Tiger grabs, like, the big piece of metal they pulled out of the light fixture. Sam grabs, like, one of those long tube light bulbs and then smashes it so it's a jagged point.
Great. Smart.
And before they go, Sam says, okay, I'm going to be honest. My desert island band was Simon and Garfunkel. It's not anything cool or punk. And they all go butt down. It's like, Reese is like, mine is Prince. Tiger said, still the Misfits. Amber says, I would say Madonna and Slayer. And they turn to Pat. Pat's like, I can't really think right now.
Yeah,
I can't answer the question.
My hand is duct taped to my arm, so I'm pretty much focused on that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they don't know what the Nazis are doing, which is basically like the Nazis are now surrounding the building and waiting for them to come out. They're very smart, Allison. So they open the door, and again, a fantastic idea. Sam hurls the light tube, so the jagged glass tube would hit someone if they were standing there. There's no one there. So now they're walking through the completely pitch dark venue. Allison Clark appears at the entrance near the exit sign and then sicks a trained pit bull on them.
No.
The pit bull immediately takes down Tiger and rips out Tiger's throat, killing him.
Oh.
Reese, everyone scatters, screaming. Reese runs to the kitchen, is able to get a window open. He jumps out. He is then immediately stabbed by a smiling skinhead until Gabe pulls the skinhead off. It's like, okay, we don't have to do all that to the body. Reese's barely alive, but he is dying. Like, he will be dead in minutes, and he ends up being dead. But again, stabbed to death by a smiling fucking skinhead.
No, that's like the most horrific. That's one of the most horrific deaths. Like in terms of the context that we've had on the show.
Yeah, I feel like it's that and the end of Speak No Evil. Remember when they're
Yep.
Sam is able to is attacked by a Nazi, but is able to grab a fire extinguisher and blast it in his face enough to like run back to the green room. And then the attack dog attacks Amber next. She sinks its teeth into her leg, and she grabs the mic stand, and it creates this intense feedback, and the noise drives the dog away.
Okay.
Which is good. It's good to hear. So the dog is driven away, and Pat on the floor says, sees a set list with the name Fleischwolf on it, which we also saw in the
that
note
was on
in
the
Amber's
napkin in her pocket.
Okay. In Emily's pocket. He grabs it and takes it with him. And so the only ones still left are Sam, Amber, and Pat. And they all have to reconvene in the green room. They're back where they started. Outside, Darcy's like, could we just send in multiple dogs already? And Clark says, well, you have to shut off the feedback because it scares the dogs. And no, they're fighting dogs. You can't have two of them in there. What the fuck are you going to think they're going to do? You know?
Yeah.
Daniel, however, is furious. And Daniel's like, he was supposed to be dating Emily. I'm not sure what the gender politics are when there's one woman and everyone else is an insane man. Like, I don't know whether you're allowed to date or what the situation is. But he's like, let me fucking go in there myself and I will take care of shit. And Darcy says, sloppy is fine, but do not cut the bone. And so Daniel and his other fucking skinhead goon, Jonathan, head in. And Daniel's like, I'm going to kill these people. If they have Emily in there, if they've hurt her, I will fucking kill all of them.
You're
going to
be pretty disappointed, bro.
Yeah. They break down the door of the green room. Sam drops down into the heroin lab to hide. So they're just squaring off against Pat and Amber. And Daniel says, where the fuck is Emily? He pulls the sheet off of her body. Mm-hmm. And he demands to know who killed her. Amber said, bitch, it was Worm. And he stabbed her when he found out that she was leaving with you.
So they know.
Allison, who will survive?
Who will survive?
Okay, list to me who's left because there was just a lot of death.
Totally. So we have Pat, who's from the Ain't Rights. We have Amber, who's friends with Emily and is part of the neo-Nazis but is on our side now.
Yeah.
Daniel, who, again, is cousins with Tad, is going
Daniel's
to leave the
die.
Neo-Nazis.
Yeah. Daniel's going to die.
And then Clark, the dog trainer.
He's going to die.
Gabe, the venue guy, who really wants to be a red lace guy.
I feel like he's going to survive and, like, try and be in charge of what's left.
And then Darcy, Patrick Stewart, the head of it all.
He needs to die.
Yeah. And so do you think Sam. Do you think
Sam's down in the lab? Okay.
Yes, we have Sam, Pat, and Amber. Who of those do you think is getting out of here alive?
I think Sam will survive. Pat and Amber will both die, but towards the end. And that the try hard guy will survive to kind of like try and rebuild.
Great. Okay.
Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy. And your plants do too. Aw. I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Amber says, like, the word Fleischwolf, that was when that song played in the Cowcatcher set, that was their signal to leave. They were going to leave this life behind. And Daniel realizes, like, oh, okay. Oh, God, everyone knew. Like, she knew. Amber knew. Darcy did not know. So at the same time they're having this conversation, Darcy is realizing what we're realizing.
Okay.
And he looks over at Daniel's car, and he's able to, like, find Daniel's keys inside. He opens up the trunk. It's all of Daniel's shit packed into luggage.
Yeah.
Not only that, Allison, he pulls out, it is a wrapped baseball bat covered in blood. And Darcy says to Gabe, this was supposed to be disposed of after Easter last year. The implication being, one, this baseball bat was used to murder someone. Two, Emily and Daniel were going to the feds. Like, they were not only leaving.
They weren't just leaving. They were burning the whole thing down.
Exactly.
Good for them.
I know, and it's like, oh, well, you do feel bad for Emily then. Like, well, no wonder you didn't want anyone to fucking find out about this.
Yeah.
And then he says, you know, Gabe, Worm really was our saving grace. Like, if he hadn't stabbed Emily, we would never have known that they were going to do this. So really, Worm is a hero. And that's the first time Gabe's like, ooh, I don't know if I agree with that. Worm murdered that woman we all know and is part of this. You know, so it's sort of like, that's even as a neo-Nazi, that's his first moment of like,
there's a line. Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. Inside, Amber, Pat, and Daniel then go with Sam into the heroin lab. And they're like, Daniel, do you have any idea how to get the fuck out of here? Because now at this point, Daniel's like, yeah, fuck it. If Emily's dead, then fuck these people. They killed her.
Okay.
You know, I'm with you guys.
That's the pivot.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Jonathan, his compatriot, his neo-Nazi skinhead compatriot, has run back out to tell Darcy everything that's happened. So Darcy at this point just starts handing out weapons to the rest of his goons. It was like, go ahead and shoot them if you have to. Keep the clusters close together because you'll be digging out the bullets yourself. So if you have to shoot them to kill them, fucking do it. But please know that that's what's going to happen.
Is any kind of any life worth having to do that? Like, obviously, like, this is already, like, it's like, this is a life based on hate and discrimination and violence or whatever. But it's like, boy, you have to really hate everyone who isn't a straight white guy to do that.
Yeah. And I guess we're sort of thinking like Daniel and Gabe, like there are people in the, like do get to the point where it's like, oh, we shouldn't be doing this. Happening? But it's like that point seems to be only when someone is brutally murdered.
Yeah,
you know?
It's too late.
Yeah. But so Darcy's handing out all these weapons, but Daniel says, okay, there's no way to get out of this bunker. We're going to have to go back out and try to get out of the green room again. Daniel leads
stupid green room.
And he's like, let me go. There's a gun behind the bar. Let me go get it. Allison, Daniel steps behind the bar and is immediately shot in the head by a skinhead coming in the front door. And that is a free-for-all. Pat ends up slashing the throat of a Nazi, the Nazi that shot Daniel. Like, it is just a fucking melee. Again, it's still pitch dark in there. And every time they try to make progress, but they can't do it, Amber ends up getting her hands on one of the Nazi's shotguns. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she's like, we're going out the front fucking door. Let's do it. So it's Amber, Sam, and Pat. They go out the front door. Amber is immediately shot in the leg. There's like four neo-Nazis just standing there. And Sam is taken down by the attack dog who disembowels her, Allison.
No!
Allison, Pat grabs Amber, who is now wounded but alive, and they head back to, you guessed it, the green room. They can't get out of this fucking building.
Fucking green room.
And they lock the door, and Amber says, honestly, I feel lucky because at least they're going to shoot me. Whatever they're going to do to you, man, they're going to stick the dogs on you. And I do agree, if I had to be between being shot and be disemboweled by an attack dog, shoot me, baby. Any day of the week, shoot me. And then they're kind of like, they're both so incredibly injured and like losing blood and look horrible. And she tells him, I'm sorry I didn't listen to your dumb paintball story. Do you want to tell me the rest of it? Because he got cut off.
Yeah.
And he's like,
we were getting slaughtered by these Iraq vets. They knew real war and they played real war. Hand signals, flanking, just wiped us all out.
And the only way we could win is his friend Rick got fed up and said, fuck it, ran out and just started wiping out their whole team because he was no longer afraid to die. And Amber says, well, sure, but we're up against real guns.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, and you can't play real war. And she picks up the Sharpie and she tells him, you know what, let's pretend. So I think they're like, yeah, let's fucking go out in a blaze of glory, man. I mean, what else can you do?
What, are you going to wait? Like, you're just prolonging this nightmare. Like, you're not...
Yeah.
Like, just do it.
So in his office, Darcy tells Gabe, you've earned these, and finally gives Gabe a pair of red laces. Again, we see Gabe has, like, at least a moment of, fuck, like, the things I've done to do this.
Yeah.
And Gabe says, do you think, like, I mean, we're doing this, but, like, I think he's starting to be like, are you going to kill Worm and the other cowcatchers, too?
Yeah.
And he says, like, do you think Worm and the cowcatchers will be a problem? And Darcy says, that's the thing. There's this bad batch of heroin going around. And boy, it'd be real shame if they got their hands on it. Like, you know, but that, you know, them, like Worm has such bad habits. Ergo, Darcy just poisoned their heroin. Like he gave that to Worm and the other cowcatchers specifically to kill them in a way that can't be traced back.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, they OD'd or they got bad heroin. But like, you know.
Right. There's no way to. And again, the cops are not investigating. Like, they're not going to be like, oh, we don't want to get involved in this. You know?
Yeah.
So Jonathan and another skinhead go back to the green room again to try to take on Amber and Pat. But Amber and Pat have learned a few things. And they turn on the feedback incredibly loud. So at least the attack dog can't.
Will stay away. Yeah.
Yeah. And the attack dog, not only that, runs out the front door and then runs into the woods. So we see this attack dog run and keep going. And the skinheads are telling each other, like, don't tell Darcy or Clark we fucked up and lost the dog. Like, don't tell him we just did that. They get to the green room and they see Pat standing, staring at the wall. And he turns around and his face is covered in Sharpie and sort of like a camo motif.
Yeah.
And he tells them, I'm Odin himself. And then he drops down into the heroin lab screaming and brandishing the piece of metal from the ceiling light.
Yeah.
As a machete, just fucking screaming. So now it's like, oh, one of these or both these Nazis are going to have to go into, they are now vulnerable. And yes. He's acting insane.
For like the first time.
Yeah. And so Jonathan's like, God damn it. But Jonathan has, the Nazi, has the shotgun. So he's like, all right, let's fucking do this. Jonathan drops down. But when he looks back up, his Nazi compatriot's looking down. Amber steps out and slits the other Nazi's throat over the hole.
Yes.
And so Jonathan starts firing at her like one, then another. And Amber's screaming. He has two shots left and then sprays a fire extinguisher into the hole so that the bunker is all cloudy.
Yes.
And then a body drops from the hole and Jonathan shoots it again, but it's Emily's corpse. So they're doing a lot of different tactics that are very smart.
This is some incredible defensive, like,
exactly.
Could it be me?
And then, so there's one shot left, and Pat has nothing to lose. So Pat, like, leaps out of the ether, and he and Jonathan are just fucking grappling for it. And Jonathan is so involved in the fight that he doesn't see Amber has taken the handgun from his fellow Nazi, walks up behind him, and then just shoots him in the fucking back of the head.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then, so now Amber and Pat, they're like, fuck it, let's do this. And as they get back up, they run into Gabe. And Gabe is standing there, and he's wearing an apron. I think the implication is, like, he is going to be in charge of, like, disposing of all of the bodies. Like, he's going to have to, like, be physically involved.
It's a nightmare.
And that is the thing that has broken him. And he says to them, if I had known that this is what it was.
I mean, what did you think it was?
Exactly.
A book club?
I mean, but I guess they lie to you. I mean, like, they must tell you some compelling things, obviously, because this keeps happening. Like, there has to be some part of the human brain that, like, cannot see that this is what happens every fucking time.
Especially people who are, like, feel like they have no community, who feel like they've been. It's like, I understand how it happens, but like, damn. Bro, the foundation that this is based on is just a genocidal government machine. Like, it's like, of course people are going to die. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. So, So and he tells them, I don't want to go to jail. So basically, he's going to be their cover. So Gabe walks in front of them. They have the shotgun and they walk him out of the building. Basically be like, he's now our hostage, right?
Yeah.
Allison, they go out of the building. There's nobody else there. Everyone has gone over to the residence to help stage the bodies. And every Nazi that was there, they have now killed. Yeah. So like all the red laces that were sent to dispatch them, are dead. And then Darcy and Clark and like the higher, like those people are over at the place.
Yeah.
And so they're like, take us to the compound. I would have ran away and left. But I think we think that Pat and Amber are so far gone and Pat really just like wants revenge for the band.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they see Gabe, they take Gabe at gunpoint and he walks them to the compound, which is pretty close by. And we also see the attack dog that's running in the woods now, like has like a chain, but like the attack dog's just loose in the woods running around.
That's fun.
And they're about to enter this compound and Pat says to Amber, you don't have to come. Like I have, all my friends are here. But again, it's like, she's like, my friend died. I fuck these guys.
Yeah.
And they walk up, they see a Nazi parking their band van on the compound, and they demand his gun. And they, again, put him at gunpoint. They let Gabe go. And I think they're like, go call the cops. Mm-hmm. And I think we're to think that Pat is the one who just, it is his hesitance to kill. He couldn't have just killed Gabe, especially because Gabe was said to them, like, I didn't understand. I don't want to go to jail, but I will show you the compound. Like, he couldn't just shoot him, right?
Yeah.
Amber is in a different space, but they let Gabe go. So we also are seeing Gabe walk through trying to find the road to try to actually, like, call the police. As they walk, they manage to take this Nazi, and they get to the part where they basically find all of their bodies, the bodies of their friends. So their bodies are just laid out, and they're going to be disposed of. And they see Clark's there, the dog guy, some random Nazi. And we see, finally, the setup. And Pat realizes, oh, they were going to stage it like it was our fault. They were going to pin it on us. They were saying that we were going to siphon gas so that, like, the dog, like, we were allowed to be killed.
Yeah.
And who's putting together the setup, Allison? It is Darcy.
Obviously.
Clark tries to interrupt them, and Amber just fucking shoots him.
Great.
Pat turns and says, are we doing that? And Amber, who again is, like, glassy-eyed, says, why else would we have come up here? But again, like, Pat is still a good person.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should. And he says, this is a nightmare. And Darcy says, for us all. And Amber replies, tell me that those fucking stupid words are his last. Allison, Darcy turns to walk away from them, and his, like, little attack, the other Nazi lunges at them. Amber shoots the other Nazi.
Yeah.
Darcy turns to fire back, and then they're just in a fucking firefight. He hits the vehicle, and finally, Pat shoots him directly in his head.
Yeah.
And he collapses. Good. And they go to stand over his body. We see Gabe make it over to the road, and he finds someone to call the police. We see the worm and the other cow catchers are dying of bad heroin. We see Tad. This is sad. We see Tad cleaning, like, vacuuming his rug for. He still thinks his cousin is coming. Oh. He doesn't know all this. So he's vacuuming for Daniel and Emily, and both of them are dead. And we see Pat and Amber sort of collapse near the van, and we hear on the radio the band's interview with Tad is playing on the radio. And they both pull their guns out as something approaches, and it's the loose attack dog. And the dog just walks past them over to Clark's dead body and, like, nudges it and lays down next to Clark. Aww. And Amber and Pat just sort of stare in the middle distance, and Pat says, you know what? I think I know what my desert island band is. And Amber replies, tell someone who gives a shit. And that's the end. The green room.
Ooh, whew.
Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think some people may have made in the movie The Green Room?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, I hate to put it on the band at all, but, like, gig where you don't know where you are, what's happening, like, the second you kind of realize, like, it's fucking skinheads, just, like, turn around and get out of there. And there are a million other ways to get money that don't involve like putting yourself in that kind of danger, I would hope.
It's just so hard. And I mean,
they were, I mean, they had no choice. I get that. But like, obviously that was like what led.
Yeah. I guess it's just so hard to know. It's like all of that would have been okay had they not witnessed a crime, but I guess they would not have witnessed a crime
if they hadn't been there.
If they hadn't been there.
Right. And it's like, and it sucks that it was like, oh, it was just the phone being in the group. But it's like, where else? You needed to charge the phone while you were playing. That was going to happen in the green room and not like on stage. Like, it's like all those things. That it's just, oh, God. And then, I mean, once things were really going, I guess if they had tried to make a run for it just early on, I feel like maybe someone could have made it. But,
yeah.
Everyone still would have ended up dying. And at least this way, a bunch of fucking Nazis also died.
I was going to say, that was the fatal mistake, is being a fucking Nazi. Yes. I don't know how you could be a Nazi and not see... I don't know how you could be a Nazi and not see how things are going to end up for you based on history.
Yeah. You don't, like, retire with a gold watch and you're like, wow, we really did something. Like, it's not like...
Yeah, you retire to a bunker with a bullet in your fucking head.
Yeah.
As you should.
Yes.
So, that's something to think about. End. Again, I can't imagine the neo-Nazi listenership is high on our pod.
No, I would hope it's zero.
Yeah. And it will be after you kill yourself, so...
If it's not, it better be soon, so...
Yeah. All right. And then finally, where would you put Green Room on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I mean, I think like the realness of all of this, both like in it being just like, oh, we're just in this green room. We're just on this cut. Like, you know, it is just neo-Nazis are fucking real. Like,
yeah,
this doesn't happen, but like this happens, quote unquote. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think a 7 for me.
Yeah, I feel like it is more of a action movie or a thriller.
Definitely.
I mean, I guess like a drama because it is about the action. But yeah, like the moments of realization of what's going on. The moment when they play Nazi punks fuck off. But it's also like it's thrilling. Like you are thrilled that they're doing
it. It feels like psychological action thriller.
Yeah, so I would say I didn't find it scary or spooky. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed it. I love this movie. I loved it the first time I saw it. I loved it again. An incredible film. In terms of scary, I'll go five.
Okay.
You know?
That seems fair.
Yeah. But definitely worth the watch. And I just think if you're someone who is more like, oh, I can't watch supernatural stuff or I can't like handle the tension of a horror, this wouldn't be an issue for you.
Yeah. This feels like it's like bam, bam, like a lot of stuff happening, but like the stuff that's happening is really awful.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, what a phenomenal film. And thank you so much for listening and telling us.
Come to the live show Sunday, March 26th, 7 p.m., 4 p.m., and momenthouse.co/ruined for those tickets because we got to talk about the new Scream.
Oh, we got to. Yeah, we're excited to see you guys there. In the meantime, we love you very much. And please, if you can,
just keep it spooky.
Please keep it spooky.
Please. Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.
Welcome back to our studio where we have a special guest with us today, Toucan Sam from Fruit Loops. Toucan Sam, welcome.
It's my pleasure to be here. Oh, and it's Fruit Loops. Just so you know.
Fruit?
Fruit.
Yeah, fruit.
No, it's Fruit Loops. The same way you say studio.
That's not how we say it.
Fruit Loops, find the loopy side.